Welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Adams. Today's episode is on choosing initial ART in people with HIV with transmitted drug resistance, featuring Dr. John Baxter, who is a professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases and Department of Pathology at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University, and head of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cooper University Healthcare in Camden, New Jersey. He'll take us through a case study of a patient newly diagnosed with HIV with transmitted drug resistance and explore the latest data and recommendations on choosing an initial ART regimen for this patient. This episode is taken from our series on key decisions in HIV care. You can follow along with the slides, which are available in the show notes. Let's get started and listen in to Dr. Baxter.
Hi, I'm John Baxter. I'm head of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cooper University Healthcare, and I'm a professor of medicine at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University in Camden, New Jersey. And I'm going to talk about choosing an initial antiretroviral regimen in a person with HIV with baseline transmitted drug resistance. So here's our case. This is a 25-year-old male recently diagnosed with HIV. He's naive to antiretroviral therapy other than taking PrEP, which he stopped approximately 1 year ago when he was on FTC and TDF. He has a baseline genotype, which shows evidence of both nucleoside and non-nucleoside resistance, and he's HLA-B5701 negative. His CD4 count is 856, his viral load is 34,790, and he has pre-existing or transmitted drug resistance. The rest of his laboratory studies are relatively normal. So this slide looks at the selective pressure of antiretroviral therapy and how drug resistance develops. So when you have a patient who starts therapy initially, oftentimes, there's a mixture of viral quasi-species, which may include a drug-resistant variant at very low levels, and that's shown in orange here. And if a patient does not have a fully suppressive regimen or is not adherent or has pre-existing resistance, as seen in this case, the resistant variant is selected. This is survival of the fittest, and the fittest variant becomes the predominant population of virus in that patient. Now, when it comes to transmitted drug resistance, why is this important? So this is data from a study that looks at patients who were started on antiretroviral regimens, and after starting, baseline genotyping was done to look and see if baseline resistance affected time to viral load suppression. And what was found is that those patients who had wild-type virus suppressed, as would be predicted. However, those that had an IC50 of greater than 10 for one or more antiretrovirals were less likely to suppress, and it took longer for them to suppress on the regimen. So this is data that shows that patients starting a PI-based regimen or a non-nuke-based regimen are less likely to suppress, and it's going to take longer for them to suppress if they have transmitted drug resistance at baseline. Now, this is data from the START study, and this was a study looking at when to start antiretroviral therapy. It took drug-naive patients from over 30 different countries and started them on therapy or deferred until their CD4 counts dropped to 350. What we did is to do baseline genotyping on patients at study entry. And in this case, these were commercial genotypes collected from around the world, and we were able to analyze the frequency of transmitted drug resistance in this study cohort. And what we found, at least for the US, was pretty typical that patients overall, 12.6% had evidence of drug resistance to one or more antiretroviral drugs. And within the US, the most common mutations observed were the non-nucleoside mutations, 8.4% overall. But you can see that transmitted drug resistance varies from country to country. So, for example, in Australia, we actually observed a lot of nucleoside resistance. And in Europe, non-nucleoside resistance was less common. So this was using standard genotyping, using Sanger sequencing to look for drug resistance. The mutations that were most frequently observed in this patient cohort are shown here. So for the nucleoside class, what we observed most frequently were TAMs. In this case, the most common were the 215 revertins shown here, most commonly the 215S mutation, followed by the M41L, and then the 219 mutations. For the non-nucleoside class, the most common mutation we observed was the K103N or S mutation. And then there were other non-nucleoside mutations detected as well, such as the 181C mutation and the 190A, S, or E mutation. For the protease inhibitors, the two most common mutations we saw were the L90M and the 46IL mutations. Now, this is additional data from the same study cohort, but here we did next-generation sequencing looking at minor variants. These are typically present in less than 20% of the viral population. And what you can see is, looking at the different drug classes, we detected a certain number of mutations at the above 20% threshold comparable to Sanger sequencing. But using this more sensitive assay, we found a fair number of low-level variants that were transmitted in this patient cohort. So you can see that's particularly true for the nucleosides, where we found a fair number of low-level mutants, as well as the protease inhibitor class. It was less of an issue for the non-nucleosides. Most of them can be detected with standard sequencing, although we did certainly pick up additional mutations using next-generation sequencing. And for the integrase inhibitors, we found very few patients with integrase resistance at the above 20% threshold, and there were some at very low levels, but the clinical significance of these are uncertain. Now, back to our patient case. So these are the results of his plasma genotype. You can see that for the nucleosides, he has two mutations, the 215S, which is considered a revertant mutation, and then the 219R. And using a standard commercial genotype, this would predict resistance to cytarabine or AZT. Using the Stanford HIV drug resistance database, which is a nice way to get another interpretation if you enter the mutations into that program. This also predicted intermediate resistance for AZT and potential low-level resistance to abacavir and tenofovir. For the non-nucleosides, he had the K103N mutation and the 181C mutation. These are two of the most common non-nuc mutations that are detected in patients. And as you saw from the START study, the K103N mutation was the most common mutation that we detected causing transmitted drug resistance. And these two mutations together would cause broad resistance to the non-nucleoside class, except possibly for doravirine. For PIs, there were no mutations detected, so he would have fully susceptible or wild-type virus to the proteases. Now, just a little bit on transmitted integrase and darunavir resistance. So in clinical trials, second-generation integrase inhibitors, namely dolutegravir and bictegravir, rarely select for resistance mutations. And this applies to both antiretroviral naive and treatment-experienced patients. Integrase resistance testing is really only recommended if there's concern that integrase transmitted drug resistance may be present, or if a patient is viremic on an integrase-based regimen. And the IAS guidelines recommend against generally doing integrase resistance testing. For rapid start, so starting treatment quickly before having results of the baseline genotype, it's recommended that in addition to integrase inhibitors, darunavir is also recommended owing to the low risk of resistance, even with intermittent adherence. And what we found in the START study is that when you phenotypically looked at these isolates that had PI resistance, the vast majority of them were fully susceptible to darunavir, even in the presence of protease mutations, because they tended not to affect susceptibility to darunavir. So this is some interesting data looking at baseline integrase resistance and its lack of impact on virologic suppression in treatment-naive patients. So we know that you get high levels of viral suppression with first-line regimens with bictegravir or dolutegravir. And this data basically showed that pre-existing integrase resistance, even when present in 1.3% of patients, and most commonly the 97A mutation, that it had very little impact or no impact on chances of full virologic suppression. And all patients with evidence of transmitted drug resistance at baseline achieved suppression at 48 weeks. So you can see that there were 7 patients in the bictegravir group and 6 in the dolutegravir group that had a 1 or more integrase mutation, and they all fully suppressed, and specifically the 97A mutation, 6 patients in each group fully suppressed. If you were to look at the impact of the 97A mutation, it really doesn't have an impact on bictegravir or dolutegravir susceptibility. Now, these are the recommended first-line regimens for most patients with HIV from the DHHS and the IASUSA. And you can see the DHS is recommending bictegravir FTC-TAF or dolutegravir 3TC abacavir if the person is HLA-B5701 negative, or dolutegravir with either FTC or 3TC plus TAF or TDF. And then the 4th option would be dolutegravir and 3TC, except for individuals with baseline viral loads over 500,000 with hepatitis B virus infection, or for whom results of resistance testing or HBV testing is not yet available. And for the IASUSA, very similar regimens, bictegravir FTC TAF, dolutegravir FTC plus either TAF or TDF, dolutegravir plus 3TC TAF or dolutegravir 3TC. And they're noting that it's possibly not suitable, that 2-drug combination, if patients have a baseline CD4 count of less than 200. Now back to our case study. So we have our 25-year-old male who's recently diagnosed with HIV, naive to ART except for a prior history of PrEP in the past. And then we believe he became infected after stopping FTC-TDF. His baseline genotype shows evidence of nucleoside and non-nuke resistance. He's HLA-B5701 negative. CD4 count is normal. Viral load is 34,790. So given the evidence of transmitted drug resistance, what are his best ART options? So they're listed here. He still has a lot of options available. And bictegravir FTC-TAF should be fully active. Dolutegravir abacavir 3TC also would be fully active, as would dolutegravir, FTC or 3TC or TAF or TDF. The 2-drug combination of dolutegravir and 3TC could also be considered, as well as darunavir, cobicistat, FTC and TAF. What would not be a good option, in my opinion, would be a non-nucleoside-based regimen, given his evidence of baseline non-nuke resistance. The other point I wanted to mention is there have been cases in patients on PrEP who have been infected with MDR viruses. And the first reported case was a 43-year-old male who was on FTC and TDF and was sexually active with multiple exposures and became HIV positive. And it was interesting, they did plasma as well as dried blood spots looking at tenofovir levels and found that his levels were clearly consistent with adherence to the regimen. And he had acquired a multi-drug resistant HIV strain that had four TAMs, the 184V, and a high-level phenotypic resistance to L-bitegravir. So you can see the mutations that are here, and then the interpretation or susceptibility, and showing that he had a broad three-class resistance and even had a minor protease mutation as well. And there's also been a similar case reported in a 26-year-old man who was adherent on TDF FTC for PrEP and was infected with a MDR strain as well. So here are the key take-home points. So in the absence of a pre-therapy genotype, it's best to use agents such as darunavir or a second-generation integrase inhibitor, which are high genetic barrier drugs and less likely to be associated with transmitted drug resistance. HIV genotyping can detect transmitted drug resistance prior to initial therapy. It's usually unnecessary to obtain an integrase baseline genotype unless integrase resistance is a significant concern. And the other point about baseline resistance testing is that standard Sanger sequencing may not detect all potential mutations, and that more sensitive assays, such as next-generation sequencing, can detect low-level minor variants. And finally, infection with MDR-HIV has been described in patients on PrEP. So please feel free to go online for more clinical care options activities on key decisions in HIV care. Thank you.
Thank you to Dr. Baxter, and thanks to you, the listener. To listen to more episodes in this series and to see slides and webcasts on key decisions in HIV care, see the links in the show notes. Thank you and have a great day.